Rock and roll, I got Scott Berman on the Capital Razor Show, Season 3, brought to you by PitchDecks.com, now powered by them. Really stoked to have you, man. How are you doing today?
Good. Ruben, thanks a lot for having me on. Good to see you.
You too, dude. I met you at the, what was it? It was the Newport Beach Family Office Club meeting. We got to hang out for a little while and talk some shop. That was really cool. Yeah. Cannabis syndicator in the house. That was really cool. We've never, ever done a show on cannabis syndication, so this is going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to dive into so many topics. But for the audience that has never heard of Scott Berman, tell us a little bit about how you got into this business.
So basically, prior to this business, I was involved in an advertising company that did politics online, digital advertising for political campaigns. And in 2014, I got a political client that was legalizing cannabis in different states. So in order to get it legalized, you have to put up ballot initiatives. And just like there's a race for Congress, there's a race to vote yes on cannabis. And so we got involved running digital advertising actually in Alaska in 2014, vote yes on cannabis. And we targeted Republican female with one ad, a Democratic male with a different ad based on the polling. So cannabis is an interesting issue because there's a lot of different reasons why people want it legalized. And so it worked in 2014. I was super excited about it. And then I started looking at 2 years later, what was going to happen in the next midterms in 16 and 18. And that's how I started to get really interested in investing in the space.
Fascinating. Okay, so we're definitely going to dive into the whole process of syndication here. I'm going to be very curious about your relationship or your partnership, or not partnership, but you hanging out with the Family Office Club there. I'm sure there's a lot of investors that come in through that club. You've been going to these for a little while, and you also are a user of the sponsor PitchDecks.com. So we'll chat a little bit about that. Before we go into any of those topics, though, I'm curious about cannabis recreational use, cannabis for medicinal use. Like, what are some of the reasons why people use it, and what are the forms that they have access to these days across the country?
Yeah, it's really interesting what's happened in the medical marijuana states now. There's about 38 states that have laws covering medical cannabis, and each one of them has a different list of ailments that are appropriate or acceptable to get a medical card. So they can range from Crohn's disease to cancer, anxiety, sleeplessness, pain, and things like that. And so if you go to a doctor, they can give you a prescription or to get a card, and then you're eligible to go into a medical cannabis store and buy product. So that list is expanding. The more research that we're getting on cannabis, the more ailments that we find that it helps for. And so it's really interesting how that's evolved over the years. It used to be kind of underground, started in California in 1996, and people were using it for a lot of different things. And then little by little, it spread around to other states. So you have that all medical market, but then you also have at the same time, the recreational market, people that just want to get high and want to go to concerts and want to go for nature walks and want to concentrate on and read a book and things like that. So you have a combination of consumers that are on both sides of it that can benefit from legalization.
There's two things that I want to talk about. So number one, I have night owl syndrome, and I've been looking, I don't like melatonin. And I've looked for other things to help me fall asleep outside of alcohol. So I would be interested in finding out what kind of products are available for me specifically to help me go to bed. And will I wake up groggy? I'm curious about that.
So first thing I would recommend is edibles, like cannabis edibles, like brownies or chocolate bars, 5 or 10 milligrams, probably all you need. And you have to test and see what your tolerance is. The answer about the morning is that's the best part. You'll feel great in the morning for the most part. They're not that strong. So they're strong enough to knock you out and go to sleep, but you'll feel really good in the morning. One other thing that's really important too is that CBD is also an alternative. If you don't want the psychoactive effect of cannabis, CBD can be very good for nighttime as well.
Okay. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, so I'm a big proponent of marijuana. I've never brought it up. I don't think anybody has ever heard me talk about any kind of God-made or man-made drug use. However, I used to smoke a lot of marijuana back when I was in high school. At some point, I think the products that were available to me became a little bit too strong for me to use, and I don't use them anymore. Although I love the fact that it's God made, that you can use something that was brought into spiritual existence to create all kinds. I mean, even hemp that has nothing to do with the psychoactive effect can be used for ropes. You can make clothes with it, paper. And like people talk about like all the trees that are being wasted for production of paper and toilet paper. Like hemp would be an amazing solution to create paper and all these other products. I could go on and on and on. But I'm curious about one specific thing, dude, because I used to want to start a cancer prevention organization. And actually, let me bring it up here, man. I have a list of all the different cures for cancer, and all of them are natural based. So we're talking about active hexose correlated compound, which is an extract of mycelia from shiitake mushrooms that increases your immunity. There's CoQ10. Green tea has some, I think, polyphenols that are really good. Ozone treatments, oxygen. I think there was a guy, Dr. Otto Wahlberg, back in, I can't even remember. He won a Nobel Prize for proving that cancer cannot survive in an oxygen-rich environment. There's vitamin B17, which comes from apricot seeds, which is also, interestingly enough, pharmaceutical companies have made it very challenging to get apricot seeds in the United States. So you have to sometimes order them from other countries. Crazy. I mean, the stuff grows on trees. Like, why would you do that? I guess it's because they can't make any money from it. And let's see, meditation, deep breathing, hydration. There are so many different things. Graviola, or let's see, soursop, also known as guanabana in Spanish, is 10,000 times more powerful than chemotherapy. So there's all these things that you cannot really make money off of if you're a pharmaceutical company that are natural cures. And I'm really passionate about this. So I wanted to mention that because I think cancer affects 1 in 4 Americans in the United States. If you live here in this country or probably anywhere in the world, this affects you. So I want to kind of expose this, but I have never really considered or contemplated cannabis as a cancer cure. What can you tell me about in that respect?
Yeah. It's a fascinating question because there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that cannabis can slow down cancer. The word cure is really hard to prove, and we haven't proven that yet, but there is a lot of evidence that it will slow cancer growth. And there's something called Rick Simpson oil. There's a guy out in California that 25 or so years ago had skin cancer, and he concocted a very strong oil-based cannabis medicine and put it on his skin cancer, and it went away. And then he started treating other patients, but he was always underground. He was illegally doing it, actually. And so he had to, there was no real, it wasn't out in the open, but there was hundreds, maybe thousands of people that started using Rick Simpson oil and reported that their cancer stopped growing or shrunk. And it's fascinating. Now, the challenge that we have today is we have not reached the point where we have clinical research. One of the worst things about the drug wars that we've been going through all these years is we haven't allowed research of cannabis by scientific organizations. They're finally starting to do it now. And some of the evidence that's coming out of these trials is pretty remarkable. So my firm belief is that the more we allow testing and learning about it, actually, a lot of stuff is going on in Israel these days, and we're starting to prove that it does have anti-cancer attributes to it, cannabis. And so it makes a lot of sense that it works, but we're still not sure yet of all the implications of this, but it's very exciting for the future.
One more thing that I would like to mention about this is I'll be vulnerable here. My wife and I, we have infertility issues, and ketogenic diet is really good at improving polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it also cures cancer, cures seizures, epilepsy. So if anybody's really interested in cancer prevention or reversal, ketogenic diet is very fantastic, because one thing that a lot of people don't know is that cancer actually eats glucose, which, so if you're a heavy carb consumer, sugar, alcohol, any of these things that are very typical in the American diet, we consume a lot of things that get converted into glucose in our bodies, and that's what cancer feeds off of. So if you can go on a ketogenic diet and remove glucose from your diet, your body will then convert ketones into energy, which typically comes from fat. So just another thing of thought that this is such a fascinating topic, man.
I like anti-aging too, but one thing that you brought up earlier is there's just plant-based medicine. I think we're heading into a whole new time of learning a lot more about plant-based medicine and what it can do. We've been on this whole pharma thing for so long, and there's a lot of movement, even with the mushrooms you mentioned too, and psilocybin and all these other treatments of how can they work better than what exists today. And I think in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a lot of new information about plant-based medicine being cures for some of these things.
That's so cool. All right. So how does this relate to the syndication business? Are you syndicating the business? Are you syndicating agriculture, real estate? What are you syndicating exactly as you raise capital for?
So what we do at the Panther Fund is we invest in a lot of different sectors. We've done 40 plus investments in the last 8 years, and we're in 20 different sectors. So we look at the cannabis space and we invest in the ancillary side of the business, which could include fintech, lab testing for cannabis, cannabis packaging, trade shows, software, seed to sale software. And so all the things that you need to run a regulated cannabis business, we invest in those opportunities. We also invest in growers who are growing the plant, or brands who are producing product, or retailers who own dispensaries. So there's just a lot. As when the laws change, all of those businesses come into that state, and they're all needed really, because it's coming up from underground. So that's the fascinating thing. So there's a lot of different sectors that we invest in. And because we invest in all these sectors, we study everything. I love getting pitch decks, and I love looking at the opportunity, you know, the angles. There's one company that we invested in that takes mold out of cannabis. It's a machine that you put in, and so your cannabis is more pure and tests better. And then there's another one that flavors cannabis. So the reason why it has a particular effect on you, they study the flavoring. So there's all these different things. As you had asked earlier about form factors, there's gummy bears and there's mints and there's oils and there's tinctures. And so there's a lot of innovation going on how we actually consume it. And so we look to invest in a lot of those different sectors.
Okay. And then so as you're raising capital for it, what are you explaining to the investors how they're going to, because typically family office people, they're looking for preservation of capital more so than wealth accumulation, at least in my experience so far, which is going to be fun for season 3. We're going to be talking to a lot of family offices. So we'll get to dive into the minds of these guys and ladies over time. But like, how are you selling it? I know we're going to talk a little bit about marketing here. You love marketing yourself. You have a background in marketing, I believe. But what are you doing to get people to know? Because marketing and capital raising is a lot about education, nurture, and communication. So what are you doing to get the word out?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're doing the trade shows, as you mentioned. So we're just getting out there and talking to people. We do a lot of webinars that are educational. We're launching our own podcast. It's very soon.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we want to put a lot of information out there, and it's not the most popular thing on their minds right now. But what we're trying to convince family offices is that it's an emerging space. It's growing it at a faster pace than almost any other industry. And maybe crypto and sports betting are the only two that are kind of similar in terms of the amount of opportunity and investment capital that's going into this space. And a lot of it is tied back to politics, because the total addressable market for cannabis is growing rapidly every single day. There's more places that have more stores and more customers. And so if you look at it, we're in the really early stages of this industry. And one of the analogies, and I'm sure a lot of family offices invested in ad tech, in Facebook and Google and Twitter like 7, 8 years ago. And now look at those companies. And so I think we're kind of heading into that situation now where we're still in the first or second inning, and there's a lot of growth potential in this space. So our job for these family offices is to sort of make them feel comfortable with it as an investment, that there's a lot of potential returns. There's a lot of M&A activity. There's going to be a lot of companies going public. And it's also just, it's safe because it's not going away. I think in the beginning, people are like, well, they legalized it in California, we're not sure about it. But now there's 19 adult use states, and there's more coming online every month. And so the entire country is going to be covered with this pretty soon.
So typically, the industry that I'm in, which is multifamily, I see a lot of people, particularly in the value add space, they're doing 3 to 5 year deals. What kind of length do people invest in the type of syndications that you do?
So the funds are usually 7 years, approximately, I would say, for the venture funds. maybe 5 to 7 years. So that's a little bit longer because it's a little earlier of an industry. But I did want to bring up one other aspect, which is the real estate around cannabis.
Yeah.
We know that family offices are very interested in this time we met. It was a real estate summit. And a lot of people were looking at multifamily home, apartment complexes and things like that. Cannabis real estate is a big deal. So when someone gets a license to grow cannabis and they build a 100,000 square foot facility, they need a property. They need to buy the property and build a building. We're now bringing family offices into those type of deals. And the reason why that's actually more interesting is because it's certainly less risky. Talk about preservation of capital. There's a lot more collateral. There's instant returns. The returns come quicker when you maybe do a sale leaseback type situation. So it kind of gets them into the cannabis space, but through a real estate investment. And so they're more comfortable with that. And then they start to see what's happening in the businesses that are actually on that property. And then they can get more comfortable with that type of deal.
And then are your syndications typically 506B exemptions or 506C?
C.
Okay, cool. So we can actually talk a little bit more liberally around on these topics. Let me ask you, when you're doing a syndication, are they always the same thing? Or once again, I think I brought this up earlier. Are you investing into a business structure? Are you investing into the real estate, the farm? What is it that they invest in when they put some money into these syndications?
Most of the time is investing in a specific business. We also have a fund, which is investing in multiple businesses, but a lot of times. So yeah, on the venture side, our new fund, we've invested in 9 new companies in the space. So we're bringing in money into the fund and then we're allocating it to different companies. But most of the time it's a specific business that's in a specific sector. And the investment is an equity investment into that. Now there's more debt and opportunities too, actually. So that's becoming a more popular thing, especially for a family office or RIA types. It's getting into a debt investment is safer and provides more liquidity in a quicker time frame.
So how did you learn about creating funds, just out of curiosity?
So I invested in a fund. The first one was about 5 years ago. We had a successful exit from our advertising business after 10 years. It was wonderful. And I wanted to really learn the fund side of cannabis. So I invested with some friends. That second fund, we did about 17 investments, but we looked at least 500 deals. And so like we looked at a lot, we talked to a lot of companies and I started learning from my partners are really experts that have been doing venture capital for 20 years. And so I started listening a lot. I like listening. And I learned how venture worked a lot of the time. And I'm still learning, but it's fascinating how it works in this industry because there's not a lot of VCs in cannabis right now. And there's not hundreds of millions of dollars really. So we have a pretty good network and we get a lot of information, even though we're not don't have the biggest fund in the world, we get a lot of inbound deal flow.
Okay, cool. So tell me more about your advertising background. How do you use marketing to raise capital from your perspective?
Yeah, so the key word is data for sure. What we did very effectively back in the old days, we did politics and healthcare, and we collected a lot of data, offline data of names and addresses and emails. And we put them together in a database and then we matched them to online IDs. So we took every registered voter in the country, 160 million voters at the time, and we matched those up against cookies, phone device IDs, and cable boxes. And we created addressable media for political campaigns. Then we did the same thing in healthcare. And so now, fast forward, I'm like, okay, I looked at the cannabis space and there's really not a lot of sophisticated marketing. So we started compiling our own data. We have 80,000 cannabis businesses in our database. We have millions of rows of consumer behavior. So we're ingesting data from point of sale platforms. And now we have over 10,000 investors in our database.
Wow.
So we're now taking deals and we're categorizing those investors. Some are interested in real estate. Some are interested in a fund. Some people are interested in 1 to 5 million or over 5 million. And so as a deal comes in, we're now promoting those deals to specific groups of those investors, all based on data.
Okay. Tell me about the trends around the world. Is marijuana kind of gaining ground in the rest of the Americas, in Europe, in Africa, and other places?
Yes, it is getting there, you know, slowly but surely. Germany is now allowing medical cannabis through insurance. So if your doctor recommends cannabis as medicine, you can get insurance to pay for it. Portugal is coming real close to legalizing it. Obviously, Canada has the whole country. Mexico is getting close. Even the United Nations took cannabis off of a banned list a couple of years ago. And so there's a lot of movement around the world to legalize it. It's still slow, and I wish it would speed up a bit, but it's becoming a lot more acceptable in many more places, except Russia, where WNBA star just got nine years.
From the Phoenix Mercury, by the way. Yeah. Brittany Garner, I believe her name.
Brittany Griner. Let's get her out of jail there. It's terrible.
Yes, please. Okay, cool. So how about this? Because I think a lot of people's objection would be like, hey, they may believe in cannabis and the health benefits and everything, but they may be afraid to invest because like, what if I put a bunch of money into this and then like some federally regulated organization comes in and destroys this business? And how do you handle that objection?
That's a great question. First of all, that's too far past that point because there's so many states now that have it. Like there's 19 adult use now and there's more coming every day. And so now it's become a state's issue. And so the state would have to go backwards on it. The federal government, it would be really very, very difficult for them to turn the clock back on this. Practically, there's so much money being made and jobs being created that they would put hundreds of thousands of people out of work. They would like taxes would go way down in a lot of these places. Yeah. So it's very, very unlikely that that's going to go backwards. In fact, there's a lot more momentum of going forwards quicker. So that's kind of our philosophy. I totally understand the question, but it's much better than it was even 5 years ago. And look at Arizona too, like adult use has failed there first and then it passed and now it's thriving. So if you look at the politics of it, once it gets voted in, it just gets better and better in each legal market.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So what are the other objections that somebody may have before they invest in, like, how would you handle those objections?
Sometimes they're objecting to plant touching businesses because they don't believe in it as a medicine. So that's part of it. A lot of people are still that old school mentality that cannabis is harmful, which it is not. And there's no reason in the world that it should be a Schedule I drug on par with methamphetamine and cocaine and things like that. I mean, cannabis is a lot safer than alcohol by many stretches. Yeah. I think part of it is people, like when I was growing up, it was illegal and people were going to jail for it. So there's actually still people going to jail for cannabis possession in this country. And so that's definitely an objection. Another objection is that certain financial institutions will not keep your money. If you invest in cannabis and you belong to a big brokerage fund, they might kick you out if you invest in cannabis, which is really bad. Like, so if you say, call your broker and say, I invested in a cannabis deal, he might say, well, we can't even hold your other investments now because we're anti-cannabis. So that's the challenge. Another challenge is that the public markets like the NYSE and the NASDAQ are very reluctant to take on cannabis. So these companies have a lot of trouble going public and they have to go public in Canada. That's a big thing that could change the dynamic here to make people feel more comfortable, is for us to allow those companies easily to go public in the US.
The government is incentivized to continue the momentum and legalization of hemp and marijuana and cannabis across the country because they are able to tax the sales, even the medicinal sales of these particular products, which then they can use to pay for and develop schools and create a lot of things within city organizational structures. On the other hand, I'm very curious about this because as a multifamily syndicator, people get cost segregation and other kind of tax benefits. And I'm curious about that. Is there tax benefits for somebody that wants to invest into cannabis syndications?
There's not anything specific, no. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of tax benefits. There are some opportunity zone investments that could provide tax benefits. So I guess that's one option. You bring up a good point because every state needs or wants to have a balanced budget. And cannabis is a cash cow for these states. Like the amount of money, first of all, it's being sold illegally everywhere anyway. So once the legal market starts to take hold, there's enormous tax benefits for the state. Like the comparison is alcohol, really. Prohibition of alcohol. Who made money on alcohol sales? The mafia. And then the government started making it legal everywhere and taxed it. 80, 100 years later, we have millions and millions of dollars every day on alcohol taxes. Same thing with cigarettes and things like that. So cannabis is providing a lot of revenue for states that really could use it for roads and schools. Colorado is one of the best examples. Yeah. They've had adult use for a long time, and they've returned money to taxpayers, actually, wow, through cannabis sales. Yeah. And so there's a lot of good things that are happening because its sales are good everywhere that cannabis is legal.
All right. So before we go into lightning round, man, I want to bring up Pitch Decks. You're a subscriber of Pitch Decks. How have they helped you with your marketing? What do they do for you?
Yeah, they're great. Andreas and team, Josie, they're really great. First of all, they do great content. So we give them content from ourselves or one of our portfolio companies, and they build great decks, two pagers, brochures, and postcards for the shows. They made us a great banner for our table, mm-hmm, and stand up signs, like stuff like that. They're also helping us a lot with emails and how do we connect better with family offices. They've taught us a lot about navigating that world, and we have a lot of databases on the offices, but how do you actually make good connections and put yourselves in front of them on a more regular basis? So we really enjoy working with them. And now what we're doing is we did a lot for ourselves with them, but now we're actually bringing portfolio clients in that we're raising money for, and we're turning them over to Pitch Decks. Oh, also videos too. They do good videos. Mm-hmm. So they really know how to sell deals. So we're very happy with them, and they're really nice people to deal with.
Yeah, they've actually taken on the production of all of the Capital Raiser Show videos. And if for any podcasters or other syndicators that are looking for video content, definitely check out Pitch Decks. Highly, highly recommend them. I was so stoked, dude, when I showed up at the family office event. I didn't know what to expect at the big one that was in Newport. And Pitch Decks had this like tablecloth with like graphics posted on the front, back, and the sides, and then this banner. And I was like, damn, I felt like I was receiving the A treatment. So highly encourage you guys to go check them out. All right, with that, man, let's jump into the lightning round. My first question for you is, what is the best vacation you've ever taken?
I would have to say Hawaii. Hawaii is just insanely beautiful, and I loved it there. Really great place.
What is your favorite book of any kind?
My favorite author is Thich Nhat Hanh, Zen Buddhist monk.
Okay,
That's a very big focus of mine is Buddhism. And one book that he wrote is The Miracle of Mindfulness. And he was considered the father of mindfulness in the West. He brought a lot of it over here. And so I've since read about 30 of his books, but that would be one that I really recommend.
My mentor, Wayne Dyer, was a big fan of his work. I've never checked it out. So I'm glad that you said that. And I'll go get some of his material. This is really cool. Yeah. Favorite childhood memory?
Favorite childhood memory would probably be summers at the New Jersey Shore in Atlantic City. My parents rented a house down there a lot of the times, and I would spend the summer on the beach in Atlantic City. So that was really awesome. And I have a lot of friends and memories from those days.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I don't have any specific hacks except like information. I love information, and I love to read a lot of different things about and recommend different things to people. So I'm always growing and learning and educating myself. So I think that's part of it. And meditation. I don't know if you call that a hack, but meditation.
That is a hack. It's an incredible hack. And there's all kinds of descriptions of what that is. Concentrate, like Napoleon Hill would say, concentrate on the thing that you want to build or attract. And then other people would be like, oh, manifest it. And other people would be like, you should go into meditation. And scientists will say, like, spend time in altered brainwave states, but they all essentially refer to the same thing, which is meditation.
Yes.
And it's an incredible practice that I believe all successful people, I'd recommend that you look into it if you're not doing it. Next question, do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Oh yeah, absolutely. My mindfulness training and Buddhism training has really helped me with people, sort of listening better, understanding, putting yourself in their position, like especially when you're looking at a deal and you're talking to an entrepreneur who wants to raise money and you're trying to get inside their mindset and help them achieve their vision and reality. Like, how can I help someone else make their day better and brighten their day and tell them something nice and compliment and help them? I think that's really helped me attract people in business.
What do you love about being a basketball statistician for the NBA?
Got to plug the Philadelphia 76ers here. and then I've been working there for 35 years. And I love the game of basketball. I love compiling stats, looking at numbers and telling the story of what happened in a game. Understanding like who scored what, how many points off turnovers, how many foul shots a team took. I find all of that super interesting.
That's great. Short answer on this one. Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
The best way is to put yourself out there a lot and be authentic.
100%. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yes, I have, actually.
Tell me.
I had open heart surgery in 2017. Ooh. I had a pretty serious situation that I was born with. It was genetic. And I was totally fine for 50 years, actually. And then they said, yeah, we have a problem. You need to get this fixed like right now or soon. They opened me up and I had a very complicated procedure, and I survived, and I'm very lucky to be here.
Yeah, that'll make you appreciate life, man.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Awesome. Thank God that you're here, brother.
Thank you.
All right, last question. We have a great listener, Shanna Amigo. Shout out to her. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
Well, certainly I'll start with my children. I would like them to learn how to be good humans and be good people in the world. And so that's my number one focus, is my daughters. Other than that, like, I want to be help people. I want to be able to help them and be a good person to be around, leave a positive influence on everyone that I talk to. And so they come away saying, yeah, it's a good guy, the cool guy, smart guy, whatever it may be. Like, I just want to leave positivity in everyone that I can.
I love that, man. Great answers on the lightning round. I love that part of the show. Quick shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thank you for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to Legacy Acquisitions and our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDex.com. Go to thecapitalraisershow.com to see their special offers that they have for listeners of our show. Scott, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
So first, thepanthergroup.co is the website. There's a newsletter you can sign up for. LinkedIn is great. I'm always on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find there. So you can check me out there. And I just wanted to say, Ruben, I really appreciate the time today. This has been a great interview. And I thank you very much for having me on.
It's been fun. And it's so cool diving into topics that, like, I've never really explored, man. I think the audience is really going to get a kick out of this. So thank you for coming on, sharing your wisdom and knowledge and everything else, brother.
You got it, man. Thanks.